it's the Tully Rinky Legal Power Hour on 810 WGY.
You're listening to the Tully Rinky Legal Power Hour. I'm Matthew Tully, and each Sunday at 9 p.m., we're here to give you our insight on the legal and political issues happening locally and across the country that affect you. If you're listening on your radio, we're broadcasting around the world on WGY.com. You can also visit our show's website via WGY.com or going directly to TullyRinkyShow.com for podcasts of prior shows and a comment on our blog. Tonight's show is all about employment discrimination. We'll be discussing what business owners should know about to prevent discrimination at their workplace. We'll be talking with a radio exclusive with Albany Corrections Officer Robert Hunter, who's going to discuss his discrimination based on national origin at the Sheriff's Office in Albany County, and the rise of employment discrimination based off of pregnancy. Joining me tonight is prominent employment discrimination attorney Ariel Solomon, and filling in for my co-host Greg Rinke, who's recuperating after a week in Washington, D.C., where he's preparing for a hearing in Cincinnati and Los Angeles, is prominent Albany family court attorney and matrimonial attorney Nicole Helmer. How you doing tonight, Nicole?
Doing well, Matt.
Also joining us is our favorite intern, Taylor. And Taylor, this is one of your last shows before you're back to college, right?
That's right.
All right. We'd love to hear from you tonight. Give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY or *WGY on your cell phones to get in touch with us. We'll be starting off tonight talking about the acts that are considered discrimination in the workplace. Ariel, what can I or can I not do in my workplace?
Well, Matt, there's basically three statutes that come into play when you're talking about discrimination in the workplace. The first is Title VII. The second is the Americans with Disability Act, and the third is the Discrimination in Employment Act. Title VII.
So the big one is Title VII, right?
Exactly.
That's the one that says I can't discriminate based off of somebody's race.
Those are all the major ones. You can't discriminate based on race, sex, religion, color, national origin. Those are essentially the five. Congress has added a few other statutes so that you can't discriminate on the basis of disability or alternatively age, but you have to be over 40 in order to be protected for that.
All right. So tell me about this disability, the American Disabilities Act, it's the ADA, right?
Yes, exactly.
What's a disability?
Well, a disability is essentially anything that substantially impacts your daily life activity. For example, you know, walking, talking, something that it's prominently affects you every day. In order to fall under the protections of that act, not only do you have to have a disability, but you also have to be qualified to perform your job function. So this act basically will protect anyone who has a disability and is otherwise qualified to do the job in question.
So, for example, if I lost my leg in Iraq and I wanted to become a police officer, I could file a claim under the ADA if the Schenectady Police don't hire me?
Probably not the strongest claim because likely it is going to be a legitimate business requirement that you be able to walk and run and defend yourself and other people in the community if you're a police officer.
But as long as there's a legitimate business interest, that's the way that employers can get around this.
Exactly.
Nicole?
Is there any relationship between the Department of Justice and the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission when talking of these claims?
Well, that's a good question. The Department of Justice actually comes into play if you're suing a state or government municipality or the federal government. The EEOC applies largely let me back up a second. You would file with the EEOC for a discrimination charge, and if the EEOC determines that there is merit to the claim and the claim is against a federal government or state government or municipality, they then would transfer it to the Department of Justice, who would ultimately issue a right to sue letter if mediation and conciliation efforts aren't effective, and then you would be able to file in court.
Okay, so if I had a discrimination, what I believe to be a claim based on discrimination because of an immigration or citizenship status, then are you saying that the EEOC would be responsible for that claim, handling that?
Actually, for immigration status, that would actually be brought properly before the Office of Special Counsel. It's a little bit different. It's the same type of reasoning and discrimination theories, but you wouldn't actually properly bring that before the EEOC, meaning the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, but rather the Office of Special Counsel or OSC.
Hey, Ariel, I have some questions also. If I want a notice of right to sue, who will issue it to me?
Well, that kind of plays off Nicole's question. If it's against a private employer, then the EEOC will. If it's against a government or state municipality, and you filed with the EEOC, then that would eventually be transferred to the Department of Justice. The Department of Justice will ultimately issue the right to sue letter.
Okay, and I have another question. What exactly is the Rehabilitation Act of 1973?
Again, this is kind of where the federal government is enacting statutes to create greater protections if you're in a federal employee. Frequently, Congress will try out its discrimination statutes in the private sector first and then gradually move to the public sector, and this is one of those examples. It's essentially just giving you, you know, it's essentially making applicable discrimination laws in the federal sector and giving federal employees the opportunity to bring similar discrimination claims.
Okay, thank you.
So tell us how the New York State Human Rights Commission or Division of Human Rights plays into the EEOC.
Okay. The New York State Division of Human Rights it's similar to the EEOC, but it also allows you to bring complaints that are slightly larger ambit than you would bring before the EEOC. For example, as we've just discussed, the federal statutes in question protect against race, sex, religion, color, and national origin discrimination, but New York actually provides greater protections than those afforded by the federal government. For example, in New York, sexual orientation is protected.
Hold on. Now, sexual orientation, let's be honest here, that's homosexuality.
Yes, exactly.
All right, keep on going.
Okay, so that is protected at the state level, and that is something that you would file properly with the New York State Division of Human Rights because it's not protected at the federal level.
So I can be as gay as I want to be in my employment, and nobody can do anything to me.
It is a protected status, and someone can sue the pants off you.
Ariel, I have a question.
You're good with words, Ariel.
Thanks. As a New York employer, if I receive a resume from a potential employee who states on the resume they speak a number of languages fluently.
It means they're smart.
Very smart. After interviewing them, I make the decision to hire them. Am I permitted to require them to speak English only while on the job, even if it's not their primary language?
You know, Ariel, you speak a few languages, don't you?
I do, and I think that that's an interesting question because it's not so much that question doesn't always come into play with regard to someone like myself who might speak several different languages, but rather someone whose primary language isn't necessarily English and they feel maybe more comfortable speaking Spanish or something like that. Is an employer capable of telling that individual, hey, you can only speak English here, I don't want you speaking Spanish in the workplace? And the answer is really going to be, what is the scope of that requirement? If, for example, there's a legitimate business reason for it, say, you know, when you're with customers or something to that respect, you should be speaking English, then it may be permissible, but you're really kind of teetering on, is this national origin discrimination by virtue of discrimination against someone's language or perhaps their accent or something to that effect.
So explain that to me a little bit better. So you speak French. If I say you can't speak French in your workplace or in our workplace, mm-hmm. That's fine.
You would have to, as long as you're telling me and you're making very clear the scenario in which I'm able to speak French or not able to speak French, then that's probably a okay business reason if you have some legitimate reason for it. Say, for example, no one else speaks French and my interaction with individuals would require them to understand what I'm saying to them. It may be reasonable to say, hey, you know, please speak English during business hours. But if you're going to tell me, you know, on your break or when you're talking to a family member on a cell phone, I don't want to hear French, then that's going to be a problem.
But if I owned a Taco Bell, I could say speak only Spanish, like burrito, taco, right?
That's a possibility, I suppose.
Ariel, what if someone said, I want you to speak English only at these times, and someone spoke a different language, and then what would some of the consequences be?
Well, that's going to be something that's drawn to question by the employer. What is the reason for requiring that you speak English in the workplace? And the exact requirements or the scope of your ability to speak another language in the workplace would be something defined by the employer. And then if it's questioned, the scope would be questioned by the employee in a potential discrimination action.
So I'm a business owner, Ariel. You know, I run a multimillion-dollar business. How do I protect myself from these type of claims? Besides saying things like, you know, I should only speak English in my place.
It's a good question, and I think that you know, employers in general should be very cognizant of this. One thing that employers should be doing is having a very clear standard operating procedure or agreement with employees where it makes reference that the employer does not tolerate discrimination and that it should be brought to their attention. You should clearly delineate the procedure for bringing an employment discrimination complaint. It's very important that, you know, no matter matter how frivolous or non-factually based you think the actual allegation is, that it be taken seriously. And another thing is just training. Sometimes statutes are violated by well-intentioned people, and they're just not familiar with what's required by the law, and it's very important to have training programs in place, and ultimately that will, in effect, reduce your liability.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question about employment law, give us a call, 1-800-TALK-WGY or *WGY on your cell phones. When we come back, we'll be talking about discrimination based on sexual orientation.
As a busy working professional, looking good's important to you. No one understands this better than Best Cleaners, the Capital Region's premier garment care provider and dry cleaner. Got a wrinkle in your schedule? Best Cleaners offers pickup and delivery of your dry cleaning right from your home or office, so you don't have to fit one more errand into your busy week. Call 458-BEST, and we'll take care of the rest. With three locations in Del Mar, Loudonville, and on the Latham Circle, Best Cleaners. Always look your best. Call 458-BEST. 458-BEST.
If a commercial lease is in your future, listen closely. Conley Associates will provide you with an honest, unbiased comparison of available office space. Unlike the competition, Conley Associates works directly with you, the tenant, finding your business the ideal location at the best terms. Best of all, leave the landlords to us, because we represent tenants only. Secure your new office space with a tenants-only approach from Conley Associates. Landlords need not apply. Conley Associates, 463-5500.
You know this isn't the right job for you, but the problem is you don't know what the right job is. If you're looking for career advice, Careers in Transition LLC can help. Careers in Transition LLC is a career counseling firm that helps you figure out the right job for you. They're not an employment agency, and Dr. Tom Denham is not a headhunter, but they can help you write a better resume, prep for a job interview, and a lot more. Careers in Transition LLC, 11 Computer Drive West in Albany, 366-8451, and online, Careers in Transition LLC.com.
You've worked hard to acquire your wealth. Let us help you keep it. Hi, I'm Abigail Doolittle, Portfolio Manager at Johnson Illington Advisors. Johnson Illington is a money management firm that provides very conservative and disciplined portfolio management services. Our main goal at Johnson Illington is to preserve and enhance your wealth. We have a highly experienced team led by nationally known investment veteran and economist Hugh Johnson. Visit our website at johnson-illington.com. Johnson Illington Advisors. Advisors on Broadway in Albany.
Welcome back to the Tully Rinky Legal Power Hour. I'm Matthew Tully, and tonight we're talking about employment discrimination. I'm joined by employment lawyer Ariel Solomon and my law partner and matrimonial attorney Nicole Helmer. Tonight, we're also joined by our favorite intern, Taylor. If you want to give us a call, feel free to give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY or *WGY on your phones. Let's talk about whether sexual orientation is protected under the law, Ariel. Under the federal law, it's not.
Exactly.
But under state law in New York,
it's protected under the Sexual Orientation Non-Discrimination Act, which was passed by the legislature and signed into law by the governor in 2002. Essentially, it just widens the protections of employment discrimination at the state level and permits individuals who are suffering employment discrimination based on their sexual orientation or their perceived sexual orientation to be able to challenge that before the New York State Division of Human Rights and at the state level.
So I don't have to actually be gay. I could just be perceived to be gay.
You can be perceived to be gay, or if it promulgates some amount of discrimination, it could potentially be the impetus to a litigation at the state level. That's exactly correct.
You know, I just find it very concerning in New York. As a business owner, I think you're more likely to get sued in New York than you are to get sued anywhere else. And this is just one of those things that business owners have to be aware about, because everybody's trained on the federal laws. You know you can't discriminate against somebody because of their race or their national origin or their religion. But in New York, there's this extra set of laws that make it just tougher. You know, Nicole, tell us about matrimonial law for a second. Let's divert here. And on the federal government side, what does marriage mean?
Well, in 1996, Matt, the Congress enacted the Defense of Marriage Act, which defined marriage as the legal union of one man and one woman for purposes of interpreting federal law. So what that means is that while states are free to recognize gay marriages or civil unions, the federal government is under no obligation to do the same. that means there's certain rights that are not protected under the federal government that may or you, that you might not be entitled to under federal rules that you would be under entitled to under state rules. An example of that is the federal government does not provide for couples that have entered into same-sex marriages in a state that recognizes them, doesn't allow them to get Social Security benefits or to file joint federal tax returns. On the same note, however, if a state has recognized same-sex marriages, they can file joint state tax returns.
You know, Nicole, one of the things that I always get confused about, what's the difference between a gay marriage and a civil union? Because Massachusetts, I think, is calling it marriages, but New York is calling it civil unions. What's the difference?
Well, the term civil union came from Vermont. They're the state that coined that term. Marriage is a legal status that's recognized throughout the country, throughout the world. It conveys certain rights, and it's a recognition, really, of love between two people. A civil union, on the other hand, really comes across for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community as lacking the power of the word marriage. And it also doesn't afford them some of the protections that I spoke about with regard to filing joint tax returns. It can be a very basic issue in the sense that, you know, you and I, we go to fill out a form for maybe a license or to purchase a home, and it says husband, wife, or single or married. As heterosexuals, you know, we click single or married. When it comes to a couple that's been engaged in a civil union, there really is no box for them to check, and it puts them in a very difficult situation.
So what did the governor of New York do? You know, everybody's saying that he recognized gay marriages. What exactly did he do?
What he did is back on May 14th, Governor Patterson, he issued a directive which instructed state agencies to recognize gay couples that were married elsewhere in states that allow same-sex marriages. The practical effect of that is that a couple that was married in California or Massachusetts can come to New York and get the same state benefits that a heterosexual married couple could get.
Ariel, what's going on in Boston?
Well, actually, it's pretty interesting because previously it was questionable as to whether individuals, transgender, or the gay and lesbian community would be able, if they were residing in a state that did not recognize civil unions or gay and lesbian marriages, be able to go to Massachusetts and get married. It was questionable as to whether or not that was going to happen. And just last week, actually, they overturned a statute that was enacted in 1913 that prohibited people from being married in Massachusetts if their marriage was outlawed by the state that they reside in most regularly. So it looks like they're going to become the Las Vegas of gay and lesbian marriages.
And I'm sure everybody in Massachusetts is quite proud of that. You know, I love to hear what the listeners have to say. And if you want to give us a call, call us at 1-800-TALK-WGY, star WGY on your cell phones. Right now, we're going to go to Susan from Gilderland. Susan, how are you doing tonight?
Good. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Anytime I'm on the radio at WGY, I'm just on cloud nine. Thanks a lot for calling in. So you have a question about age discrimination.
Yeah, two questions. One is, if I'm over 50, am I in a protected class? And then the second question is, if I feel that I have not gotten a job because of my age, is that discrimination, and what can I do about it?
Those are great questions. Ariel, if somebody's over 50, is it age discrimination?
Well, when you're looking at a potential age discrimination suit, what you do is you say, is this person protected by the statute? And if so, what can you do about it? And certainly if you're over 40, in this case, Susan's 50, she would be protected under the statute. And sometimes it's difficult to prove, but I would strongly recommend that you file a complaint with either the EEOC or the New York State Division of Human Rights. And what they'll do is they'll do an investigation into that. It's also advisable to perhaps retain an attorney. And certainly you can call the New York State Bar Association in order to get more information about that, because there are various statute of limitations that are involved, and it can be a very tedious process actually litigating a claim for age discrimination.
You know, Ariel, this weekend was my National Guard weekend, so I got to go over to Troy and socialize with a bunch of business owners. One of the business owners was undergoing layoffs at his company. He's in the National Guard, but he was undergoing layoffs. And what he decided to do was take the highest paid non-managerial positions and lay those people off. When I asked him, I said, you know, blank name, you know, Are those people all over 40? Because generally, as you advance in a company, you get older, you get more mature, you get higher paid. And he goes, wow, I just realized it. Yeah, they are all over 40. Is he going to get himself into trouble without realizing it?
You know, potentially he could, and rarely are age discrimination claims, you know, motivated by discriminatory animus. Rarely do people fire people over 40 because they hate old people or something to that effect. The reason can be as simple as
economics. I take offense to that, calling a 40-year-old an old person, Ariel.
I'm sorry. Protected class is what Thank I meant you. To say. My apologies. Certainly no one deems them to be old. But it frequently...
Someday, you know, you're going to realize 30 is old. But okay. For us people over that, we're not old.
All right.
We're sorry just well experienced.
Oh, you're all old to me. So.
Thanks, 19-year-old Taylor.
I just hit the 30, so.
Can I fire him, Ariel?
Yes, absolutely.
Because he's under 25?
Get rid of him.
Seriously, I could fire somebody because they're young.
You are not. You do have no statutory protections if you're under 40. But by your hypothetical earlier with your friend is very interesting because I think business owners frequently find themselves in this quandary whereby they may not be doing enough analysis as to salaries and to project into the future economy, especially with recession of concern now. The first people to go are those that make a substantial salary, and that's probably someone with a pretty great amount of experience. So it would really behoove the business owner to look at who they're laying off, and to at least go through some kind of procedures and quantify, you know, why is this position being laid off, and just ensure that whatever you're doing doesn't create a disparate treatment cause of action against you for age discrimination.
So I don't even have to say, okay, I'm going to lay off everybody over than 40. I could use that comment that my buddy used, which was, you know, I'm going to lay off the top earning non-management officials, and I could still get myself into trouble, even though he clearly did not mean to lay off everybody over the age of 40, although that's what he did.
Well, when you say get yourself into trouble, I would deem trouble.
Anytime that you face me in a courtroom, Ariel, I'm in trouble. So that's what I mean.
Well, that's a concern because just because it wasn't intentional doesn't mean that it's not going to be litigated over. So the idea would be really to prevent the possibility of litigation. And one way to do that is to make sure that you have safeguards and perhaps have a CPA look through your books and come up with a very clearly defined business reason for engaging in these layoffs.
So if I'm a small business owner, I should contact an attorney and an accountant and everybody before I just come up with this rule of, all right, top non-management officials that are getting paid or getting laid off.
It's a very good idea to do so, especially in light of a recent Supreme Court decision whereby the Supreme Court said the burden of proof is actually on the employer to prove that the layoffs were not motivated by age. So it's a costly endeavor.
All right. We'd love to hear what you have to say about this. Give us a call. 1-800-TALK-WGY. Mark from Newburgh, one of my favorite cities in the Hudson Valley. How are you doing tonight?
Good.
So tell us what you got.
So my employer has a program that they refer to as the ER program, the Executive Resource Program. The concept behind it is that they choose executives for the company from this pool of identified people. The question I have is if I was told that I couldn't be part of that program because, well, you know, hadn't made it yet, I'm too old. Is that considered age discrimination? And if it is, what are the statutes of limitation associated with that?
How old are you? Are you over 40?
Yes.
Okay. Ariel?
Mark, excellent question. And I think that you have a potential age discrimination suit there. If employers would require an employee to be with the company for a certain amount of time prior to becoming into a program and then cut off your ability to be in that program by virtue of age, and you're going to in turn be precluded from obtaining a higher rank or salary, then certainly that raises questions of age discrimination. And as soon as you're aware of it, you should certainly either contact an attorney or file with the EEOC, New York State Division of Human Rights, because it's likely that you only have 180 days to do so.
So 180 days from when he didn't get the job.
Exactly.
We'd love to know what you have to think about this. Give us a call, 1-800-TALK-WGY. And it's going to be time for the news and weather. But when we get back, we will have a radio exclusive with Native American Albany Corrections Officer, Officer Hunter, who was discriminated against or on based on his heritage.
Fox News Radio, I'm Bill Vitka. DNA from the five people killed by the anthrax attacks in 2001. It led the feds to Army Dr. Bruce Ivins. That according to a government scientist speaking to the AP.
Investigators started with DNA from some of the anthrax victims, then matched specific DNA patterns to anthrax cultures that Bruce Ivins, who was working as an Army scientist, was responsible for in the lab and where he was working.
Fox's Laura Ingle. Ivins killed himself apparently last week after he learned he'd be indicted on murder charges. He won the Nobel for exposing the horrors of the Gulag under Stalin. Russian writer Alexander Solzhenitsyn has died.
The author of numerous books that included The First Circle, The Cancer Ward, and the three-volume Gulag Archipelago exposed the world to life in the Soviet Gulag, the Soviet labor camp system.
Fox Radio's Marge Tashina. Solzhenitsyn was 89. Fox News, we report, you decide.
A10WGY Storm Team Forecast.
So keep in mind, a few isolated showers could linger into this evening as your lows settle to near 60, with a few isolated stray showers possible for Monday. Otherwise, partly cloudy, you'll get to see the sunshine, and the more seasonable highs near 80. Wednesday, a few storms possible, your highs back in the upper 70s with another chance of rain Thursday. From the Weather Channel, I'm Danielle Banks with the A10WGY Storm Team Forecast.
Pets aren't just animals. They're companions and often members of the family. Unfortunately, pets are not always treated with the care they deserve. Animal cruelty and neglect are sadly a reality. Detecting and reporting abuse are the most important steps in bringing animal cruelty to an end. The Schenectady County Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, SPCA, is a nonprofit volunteer organization that investigates complaints of animal cruelty. Our volunteers donate their time and energy because they believe in our mission to protect animals. We are not funded. We rely exclusively on public donations. You can help with a tax-deductible donation by calling 518-755-9517 or visit our website, SchenectadySPCA.org. Or if you'd like to join the Schenectady SPCA as a volunteer, again the number 518-755-9517. Or on the web, SchenectadySPCA.org.
All right, Integral One Network Solutions. Tell me what they do again.
Well, they worked with us to design our new computer network. That's really made a difference. Helps us run our business better. They monitor everything 24/7 to keep it running smoothly. And they manage it all, so I don't have to hire an IT guy.
So when I hire Integral One, they manage my network so I can manage my business. Talk about peace of mind.
Integral One Network Solutions, online at integral1.net. That's integral1.net, 464-4014.
Thanks for coming back to us. If you're a first-time listener, you're listening to the Tully Rinky Legal Power Hour. I'm Matthew Tully, and each Sunday at 9 p.m., I'll let you know about the legal issues going on around the Capital Region and the world. We're broadcasting around the planet on www.wgy.com. I'm here tonight with attorneys Ariel Solomon, who is a prominent Albany employment lawyer, and my law partner and prominent matrimonial and family court attorney, Nicole Helmer. Also joining us is our favorite intern, Taylor. And on our phone is a radio exclusive for the Tully Rinky Legal Power Hour, Albany Correctional Officer Robert Hunter. Mr. Hunter, how are you doing this evening?
Okay.
Great. Fire away, T.
If I could ask you some questions, where are you from and what tribe are you from?
I'm from the Abenaki tribe. I'm from Odinak. It's a eastern Algonquin tribe about 40 miles northeast of Montreal.
Okay. And can you give us some background, maybe what's been going on in this situation?
Yeah, I worked there for almost 7 years now, and I've been harassed to the point where, you know, people made snide comments, and they got worse and worse. I've heard comments to where, you know, I just didn't feel like going to work anymore. I heard one comment, a guy told me, evidently you didn't pass out enough blankets with smallpox on it because you're still around. And these comments are hurtful.
Officer Hunter, how did this all start?
This all started after my colleagues got to know me and asked me where I'm from, and they're curious because I can speak a few languages myself, and I've done some translation for the jail. And it began from there. It began with the small comments, Chief Skin and Bones, and Chief Hit Him Head. And then it progressed to more hateful, more... I can't think of the word, but it just made me feel like I wasn't even proud to be who I was anymore.
What's been the community reaction? Has there been other Native Americans that have been in communication with you about problems at their employment? Is the community outraged by these comments?
My community is definitely outraged by these comments, and yes, I've received a lot of calls of support saying what I'm doing is right, and you know, and for sticking up for myself and doing what I had to do to stop this.
Okay. Mr. Hunter, did you ever bring this to the attention of any of your supervisors?
I most certainly did.
And did they take any steps to help this?
No, they tried to prevent it.
As a matter of fact, it was one of your supervisors that was the main antagonist, right?
Right. I was denied a form to make a formal complaint. And then after stating I want to make a formal complaint, I was threatened basically to watch my tail because I'm complaining about it.
Go ahead, Matt. Nicole.
What were the next steps after you were threatened after making a report?
My personal next steps were I started researching on what I could do to have this stop. So I got on the computer and I started looking up the EEOC and I tried to go about it myself, hoping that it would change things.
You know, one of the things that most people realize is that discrimination based off a national origin is improper. So based on the fact that you're Native American, that's national origin, right, Ariel?
Yes, exactly. National origin would, Native American would fall under the protection of discrimination based on national origin.
And some of our listeners know this, but after 9/11, there was a big backlash against people of Middle Eastern or Arab descent. And I actually represented a good friend of mine, Joe Mansour, who was a corrections officer at a federal jail. Officer Hunter is a corrections officer at a county facility. And Joe Mansour, that's his Americanized name, but he's Arab American, and we provided legal representation for him until I basically went to Iraq, and I was awarded a pro bono award by the Arab American Anti-Discrimination Committee. My wife and I actually got a free trip down to Washington and a beautiful awards banquet, but national origin has actually picked up, and it's probably one of the quicker growing discrimination claims. Is that right, Ariel?
Well,
or is that just my perception?
We certainly saw a peak after 9/11. I don't know that I think that there's some discrimination claims that have actually really surpassed national origin, for example, age, sex, and pregnancy discrimination. But
but as far as percentage-wise, you know, it seems like there's been a dramatic increase in national origin. It seems like before September 11th, that really wasn't a big community outreach program by Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, but now post 9/11, they've done an outreach out there, and you know, they've pushed that. You know, Mr. Hunter, how did you find out about the national origin problems? Was it from an EEOC website, or was it somebody told you?
No, it was from an EEOC website. I Googled discrimination, and EEOC came up, and I started researching it, and I researched New York State Division of Human Rights, and I...
Which website did you find most interesting, the EEOC website or the state human rights website?
Actually, the state human rights, but I figured what EEOC, considering that the jail has federal contracts to house federal inmates, more would be done about it.
Right. Now, before you hired an attorney, what did you think was the smartest thing that you did? You know, was it going to the human rights website? If you could do this again, what would you repeat? You know, minus obviously contacting your employer. I meant to, if I was the victim of discrimination, what did you do that was successful that I'd want to repeat?
I would, to be honest with you, contact a lawyer.
I love it. You know, that's good. Or let me ask you this. If you could do it again, what do you wish you wouldn't have done that you did?
Try to go about it by myself.
I'm telling you, I think I'm going to have to pay you, Officer Hunter, because you're giving great advice. But did you find problems with getting an attorney? Was it expensive? You know, minus out your current attorney, who's Ariel Solomon. Did you have difficulty finding somebody, or was she the first person you went to and she took your case, or is it difficult?
I contacted a few attorneys, and it was difficult. A few of them seem to not want to touch it because there's a lot of attorneys that do visit the Albany County Correctional Facility, and I imagine they wouldn't want any backlash from that. And I did quite a bunch of searching, and actually, when I found your website, I called. I think that was one of the better days that I had lately.
I'm telling you, you're saying all the right things. Something that you may not know about, but I went to law school because I was the victim of employment discrimination. People that read my syndicated columns, I write for the Military Times company, which publishes the Army Times, Navy Times, Marine Corps Times, Federal Times. I think it hits about 2 million people every week. They know that I was a federal corrections officer at the Metropolitan Correctional Center in New York, and I was subjected to employment discrimination because of my military service. And I was actually discriminated against, and I was given the midnight assignment and the worst jail blocks because of my military service. And I sued the Bureau of Prisons, the Department of Justice. I won. And I'm now technically retired as a federal law enforcement officer from there. But I sued them because of employment discrimination. And the fundamental basis of our law firm, the Tully Rinke Law Firm, the reason why we've grown is because of employment discrimination. We have sued consistently and made landmark decisions on employment discrimination. So that's why your case is so interesting. I love military discrimination law, and I love national origin law, because I think those are the worst types of employment discrimination. And I will bend over backwards to help you. And I know Ariel's doing it. And I'll tell you, I don't think I could get a better salesman than you on the radio tonight, Officer Hunter.
Oh, thank you. Well, that's like even when I worked at the facility, they often ask me, well, are you an American citizen or a Canadian? And I continually explain to them I'm a North American citizen due to the fact of treaties. And
I actually saw that on your Channel 13. You were on News Channel 13 one night, and I saw that you pointed out you had a Canadian ID card, it looked like?
Yes.
So that means you're a Canadian citizen, too?
No, I'm not a Canadian citizen, but I do not need a passport to cross the border because that's where my reservation is. It shows that that's where my homeland is, so I have the right to cross it at any time.
That's great. Officer Hunter, I greatly appreciate you giving us the radio exclusive to interview you. You know, it's a huge highlight. You are our first radio exclusive on the Tully Rinke Legal Power Hour.
So, and I thank you guys for all the help you guys have given me. I mean, you guys helped me extremely a lot, and I mean, I'm starting to get my life back on track just because of you guys.
And that is great, and we are glad that we could help you. Thanks a lot, Officer Hunter.
Thank you very much.
Ariel, so tell us, how does it feel to be an employment litigation attorney?
Well, I have to tell you, the Hunter case, for example, is really one of the reasons that attorneys go into the profession that they do. One of the reasons that I wanted to go into the law was to, you know, defend people and prosecute individuals who really engage in overt violations of the law. And this is really just a prominent example of that. I'm really honored to have the opportunity to represent Mr. Hunter and to represent him in attempting to, you know, rectify his employment situation. And certainly, as you've heard, it severely impacted his life. And that's what attorneys are here for.
What do you think is the worst type of employment discrimination? I personally find military discrimination on the account that somebody's going away to war the worst type. Is there something that really offends you, or does it all offend you?
You know, it all offends me. I get very offended and angry, which is why I do this type of law. But I have to say that it's more a question for me of the pervasive nature of it. And, you know, if an employee goes to their employer and says, here's what's going on, I really need assistance, and they fail to act, you know, to me, that's probably the most egregious conduct that there could be.
And I remember seeing you on Channel 13 this week, and they were asking you questions about Mr. Hunter's case. And you have a video – that they made of Officer Hunter, and as well as photographs that were very derogatory.
Yes, those are two of the pieces of documentation that Mr. Hunter provided me, and they fall under the auspice of truly offensive material.
Yes, they were, and I think Channel 13 showed them. It's time right now for a short break. When we come back, we'll be talking about pregnancy discrimination. If you'd like to hear what we're, if you'd like to comment on what we're saying, give us a call, 1-800-TALK-WGY, or press *WGY on your cell phones.
Usually, a mortgage company's sole focus is property, but first-rate funding is centered on people, not property. Whether you're buying a home or struggling with your current adjustable-rate mortgage, first-rate funding will give you the same amazing personal service. First-rate funding, New Corner Road, Albany, and Broadway, Saratoga Springs. Don't wait. Call today, 452-4700, and please go online, firstratefunding.net, and see how they can help you today. Registered mortgage broker, New York State Banking Department. Mortgage loans arranged with third-party providers.
As a busy working professional, looking good's important to you. No one understands this better than Best Cleaners, the Capital Region's premier garment care provider and dry cleaner. Got a wrinkle in your schedule? Best Cleaners offers pickup and delivery of your dry cleaning right from your home or office, so you don't have to fit one more errand into your busy week. Call 458-BEST, and we'll take care of the rest. With three locations in Del Mar, Loudonville, and on the Latham Circle, Best Cleaners. Always look your best. Call 458-BEST. 458-BEST.
If a commercial lease is in your future, listen closely. Conley Associates will provide you with an honest, unbiased comparison of available office space. Unlike the competition, Conley Associates works directly with you, the tenant, finding your business the ideal location at the best terms. Best of all, leave the landlords to us, because we represent tenants only. Secure your new office space with a tenants-only approach from Conley Associates. Landlords need not apply. Conley Associates, 463-5500.
You know this isn't the right job for you, but the problem is you don't know what the right job is. If you're looking for career advice, Careers in Transition LLC can help. Careers in Transition LLC is a career counseling firm that helps you figure out the right job for you. They're not an employment agency, and Dr. Tom Denham is not a headhunter, but they can help you write a better resume, prep for a job interview, and a lot more. Careers in Transition LLC, 11 Computer Drive West in Albany, 366-8451, and online, Careers in Transition LLC.com.
I'm telling you, our songs here are awesome. We're back to the Tully Rinky Legal Power Hour. I'm Matthew Tully, and I'm here tonight with employment lawyer Ariel Solomon and matrimonial attorney Nicole Helmer. Each week in the studio with me is our favorite intern, Taylor. And to find out more about us, go to WGY.com. Tonight, we're talking about employment discrimination. And one of the things that is a hot topic, Ariel, is pregnancy discrimination. Tell us a little bit about this. Is there a minimum number of employees that a firm has to have or a company has to have before they can be sued for discrimination based off of pregnancy?
Yes, and it's the same as with Title VII.
Title VII is the EEOC laws?
Exactly, excuse me. It's the race, sex, religion, color, national origin. Like that statute, the employer needs to have at least 15 employees in order to be required to honor the requirements that they accommodate an individual because of pregnancy.
So if I have five people, I could fire them because of race, because of religion, because of pregnancy?
Well, it might not be an excellent idea to do for your reputation in the community. You would probably not.
I would never do this, Ariel. I'm just playing a role on the radio.
Just for anyone else out there, I'm just making sure.
But if I have 100 people, I'm in a world of hurt if I do it.
Absolutely.
Now, what about the state human rights laws? Is there a employee requirement? Or if there isn't, does it really matter if it, let's say, for example, I'm on an airline and a woman's walking down the aisle and she's pregnant, she's a flight attendant, and she keeps on, I fly to D.C. on a regular basis. We got an office down in D.C. I like to fly in the aisle seat, and a pregnant flight attendant keeps on bumping me. Can I file a complaint and get her fired? Not that I ever would, but could I?
Well, I mean, customers complain all the time, so I'm sure that something like that has happened. But the question of whether or not an airline...
It happened on Friday when I flew back from Washington. I kept on getting bumped in the head because she couldn't fit down the aisle. Yes. So she had to turn to the left, and I kept on getting clobbered. But
was she
I'm not complaining.
Was she no, of course not. But was she serving you drinks and pretzels appropriately?
She was.
Well, that's her job. So that's what she was doing. And, you know, you're a tall guy. Your head was sticking out in the aisle. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, but that's it. Call me Mr. Big Head.
But in any event, the test really is this individual who's pregnant capable of doing their job function? And if they need a reasonable, a small accommodation, is that accommodation really that onerous of a requirement on the employer? So likely if an employee is pregnant, you're one, going to have to accommodate, and two, allow them to continue working.
What if the job is going to be detrimental to the baby? If she's noticeably pregnant, I mean, could that harm the baby, and what kind of liabilities are there?
Yeah, you know, that's probably a phenomenal question, because I think that individuals who, excuse me, not individuals, but employers who engage in acts of discrimination against a pregnant woman do so a lot of times with very good intentions. For example, I have seen cases where a woman has been fired, laid off, basically in the interest of the unborn child's health. But it, unfortunately, that also gives rise to liability and litigation, even if it's well-intentioned, because that woman is still very capable of performing her job function, and if she needs a reasonable accommodation or perhaps a desk job or something like that, the employer, if they have at least 15 employees, is absolutely obligated to provide that.
What's a reasonable accommodation?
Well, for example, if you know, a pregnant woman cannot be on her feet for 15 hours a day or 10 hours a day. It causes swelling or backache or backache or something to that effect. Maybe there's a desk job for a couple hours that she can do, or some bookkeeping or something like that. That would constitute a reasonable accommodation.
Well, my wife had a very bad pregnancy. She actually got hospitalized during the first trimester because she got dehydrated because she had morning sickness. She luckily was able to go out on disability because of those problems. But let's assume that that wasn't an option. Do I have to, and she worked for me. Do I have to accommodate her because of her disability, because she's throwing up every morning, or is pregnancy a disability?
Pregnancy is usually analyzed as a disability. If she worked for you, I would hope that you would have accommodated her.
You don't know my wife.
Okay. But in any event, you're required to provide the same type of accommodation that you would for any other employee who is sick or temporarily disabled. So, you know, if she's got to be out for a couple weeks because of severe dehydration, then you're obligated to keep that position open.
I see that my wife is calling me already to yell at me before I'm even home. What I meant by that is, you don't know my wife, is because she's a sweetheart, a darling.
That's how I interpreted it.
Now, as an employer, if I have an employee who her recent behaviors lead me to suspect that she is pregnant, do I have the right to just come out and ask her?
Well, that's an interesting question, because employers are absolutely limited in the amount of information that they can request from an employee. So it would really be contingent on the circumstances involved, the job function that she's performing, and the type of accommodation that she's requesting. I mean, certainly after some period of time, it's going to be fairly obvious that the individual is pregnant. But nevertheless, they are still protected and still have every right to be able to obtain a reasonable accommodation, whether they're showing being pregnant or not.
Okay. And I guess on the flip side of that, if I'm pregnant and I'm experiencing morning sickness, so I'm arriving to work, you know, a half hour late every other day, but I'm still getting all of my work done and getting it done properly before the end of the day, do I still have the risk of being fired?
Nicole, is there something you want to tell us?
Hey, no. I hope to have kids someday, but none in the foreseeable future.
Don't you have a male roommate? Right. Oh, we're not going to talk about that on the radio.
Changing the subject. All right.
Well, in any event, certainly if someone needs to come into work a couple minutes late, a half an hour to an hour, the test again is that small accommodation. Say you're coming in late, getting all the work done, or maybe staying a little bit after hours to finish the remainder of the work. The test is, does that really constitute an unreasonable hardship for the employer? And I think they're going to be very hard-pressed to assert that.
So as a business owner, what can I do? If somebody is coming in late consistently for 2 or 3 months, can I can't ask them? I basically have to sit there and take this violation of our office policy?
Well, I mean, ideally you would sit down with the person and say, hey, you know, I notice you've been coming in late. What's going on? Do you need, can I do anything or something to that effect? And certainly if it's not, if they're still capable of doing their work and performing at an acceptable level and they just need to come in a little later, that does not seem like a real hardship to me.
I'm telling you, I love New York. In Texas, I'd be able to fire anybody I wanted for any reason.
And that's why I'm an attorney in New York.
All right. T, what were you going to ask?
I have a question. It could it be seen as discriminatory if you put it in a contract? You couldn't do that, could you?
What, if you're a contract hiring, saying that you promise not to get pregnant in the next 5 years?
Yeah. You can't do that, can you?
No, that's a bad idea.
Okay.
Just kidding. Now, what if I was pregnant? And yeah. My employer, well, yeah, good point, Ariel. I guess that's going to be difficult.
So, go ahead.
Well, let's not talk about transgender again. But let's assume I'm pregnant. What can I do if I think that my boss is Matt Tully and he's discriminating against me? What can I do?
Well, what you want to do is see if your office has any kind of procedures for bringing a discrimination complaint. You want to first kind of explore the internal office procedures to see if there's anything that you can do. Hopefully, it could be addressed fairly positively. If it's not, you know, this is something that you should absolutely feel free to contact the New York State Division of Human Rights or the EEOC and file a complaint. And they will, at the very least, probably do a fairly thorough investigation of Tully's office.
Very good. I'm just joking here because I take good care of all of our employees, and it doesn't matter if they're pregnant or not. All of the Tully Rinke employees are very well respected and taken care of. T, I want to go back to age discrimination for a second.
Sure.
Tell me about the 70-year-old female police officer in Texas.
Well, Matt, this is pretty interesting. I found an article I saw on the news. Recently, a woman by the name of Mary Sykes is 70 years old. And she always wanted to be involved in the law. She is now finally getting her wish. She graduated from a police academy and was handed her uniform and badge officially. So the 70-year-old woman went to police academy, got her badge and everything.
T, or Ariel, explain that to me. How can you be a 70-year-old woman? I guess it doesn't matter if you're male or female. You're 70 years old. How could you become a rookie police officer? That wouldn't happen in New York, right?
Well, I mean, the question with regard to someone in advanced years is, are they still capable of performing, or are they capable of performing the essential job function? It sounds like she just graduated from the academy, and maybe she's an exceptionally fit 70-year-old, or she primarily has a desk job or something to that effect. But it sounds like she's being utilized in a capacity that best serves the workforce in Texas.
Well, what if, you know, myself as a 30-year-old applied for the same job and found out that this woman got the job? And, you know, my thoughts are because, well, they can probably pay her less. And do I have any
Who, pay the 70-year-old police officer or the 30-year-old?
Pay the 70-year-old police officer less than a 30-year-old. So do I have any right to seek a claim or file a claim based on, you know, my age and the fact that I believe they're discriminating against me?
Well, you're not protected by ADEA because you're under 40, so you wouldn't have a formal cause of action. Your best bet would to essentially attempt to get it under some other discrimination theory. Maybe she's Jewish and you're Catholic or something to that effect. But you'd be very hard-pressed to bring a claim like that. Generally, the Age Discrimination and Employment Act was passed in order to prevent discrimination against individuals over the age of 40, and it sounds like certainly they're not discriminating against anyone over the age of 40.
Ariel, tell me about the glass ceiling and how that impacts employment law litigation.
Well, the glass ceiling is frequently referred to as kind of an arbitrary line whereby, either, albeit by virtue of age or by race or religion, for some reason, you know, only white Anglo-Saxon male, Protestant males, or WASPs, for lack of a better term, obtain the upper echelon positions in a business. So employees have very successfully litigated claims whereby they assert, by virtue of my race, age, sexual orientation in the case of New York, I cannot have access to these positions.
And I'll have the last word. That's it for this Sunday. If you have more to say, check out our website at TullyRinkeShow.com. You can send us an email anytime at info@TullyRinkeShow.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next Sunday.